No, I'm still alive. I'm writing this letter slowly because I know you can't read fast. You won't know the house when you come home. We have moved. We had a lot of trouble moving, especially the bed. The man wouldn't let us take it in a taxi. It maybe wouldn't have been so bad if your father hadn't been in it at the time. Speaking of your father, he has a fine new job. He has 500 men under him. He cuts grass at the cemetery. This one I like. Your sister got herself engaged last week. Her boyfriend gave her a beautiful ring with 3 stones missing. Our neighbors are now raising pigs. We just got wind of it this morning. I suppose you didn't know I got my appendix out and a dishwasher put in. We found a wash machine in our new house, but it doesn't work so good. Last week I put in 4 shirts, pulled the chain, and we haven't seen the shirts since.
That was pretty good.
Oh, your sister Ingeborg had a baby yesterday. I haven't heard if it is a boy or a girl, so we can't say yet if you are an aunt or an uncle. Uncle Torvald went to Minneapolis to work in a bloomer factory. We hear he is pulling down 75 a week. Your Aunt Katrina got a job in St. Paul working in a factory too. I'm sending her some clean underwear, as she says she has been in the same shift since she got there. Your father didn't have too much to drink at Christmas. I put some castor oil in his whiskey and it kept him going until New Year's. I went to the doctor on Thursday. Your pa came with me. The doctor put a glass tube in my mouth and said to keep it shut for 10 minutes. Later on, your pa asked to buy it from him. It was so windy last week. On Monday, it was so windy, one of our chickens laid the same eggs 4 times. I must close now. There's a big sale downtown and women's bloomers are half off. Your loving mother. P.S. I was going to send you $10, but I already sealed the envelope. Oh, yeah. My father was one of the best Norwegian joke tellers ever, and I couldn't tell a joke until after my father died. And something in me then decided it's okay to be trying and remembering, trying to remember the punchline so I don't sound stupid when I'm telling them. And I've been able to tell jokes more. And I'm convinced that's one of the reasons I can keep doing the work I've been doing. Many of you weren't here last week, but I spent a week talking about AIDS out of my experience of working with people with AIDS for the last 4 years and their loved ones. So people sometimes say, and one of the miners last week said, "How do you do it?" And I said, well, one way I do it is to have a lot of humor in my life. So it's helpful. I'd like to talk about today some definitions for humor and laughter, talk about various kinds of humor, and talk about some of the therapeutic benefits of laughter. Really, I'm basing some of what I talk about on the book I already mentioned, The Laughter Prescription. The other book that certainly comes to mind for many of you, I'm sure, is Norman Cousins' Anatomy of an Illness. How many have read it? Everyone ought to read that book. That is in the bookstore.
What's the title again?
Anatomy of an Illness. In it, Norman Cousins, who was a longtime editor of the Saturday Review magazine, describes his personal experience with being diagnosed with a severe disease of the connective tissue, if I'm not mistaken, all over his body. Very painful. Apparently not a great deal that medicine could do for him. He asked his doctor at one point, well, what am I going to do about this? And the doctor said, well, I'm not sure medicine can do a whole lot. And basically the story is he went out and laughed himself to health, as he tells it. Right after he got the diagnosis, he locked himself up in a hotel room in this town or city wherever he was getting treatment and got out rented a bunch of Marx Brothers movies and sat and watched those for a couple of days and laughed. And he's convinced that the power of laughter, the power of our own minds for healing is very, very strong, and we're only beginning to figure out that connection. And I know there are lots of people here in the last 2 weeks who have talked with me about their own experiences with that kind of that healing power of the mind and spirit, and I I believe in that also real strongly. We can get into some of that. Oscar Wilde has written that the original sin is that we take ourselves too seriously. And Martin Luther even said once, while he was preaching on the birth of Jesus, why are the angels flying around singing praises instead of changing the baby's diapers? So even old Martin had some good humor in him. In fact, he had a lot of good humor. So why do we discuss humor and laughter in healing? What's the importance of it? People who are in crisis because of illness or because of another kind of crisis in their life are often anxious, distressed, angry, many of the times depressed, all of those stages we talked about earlier in the week of emotion when a crisis hits. Many of us have not learned to let emotion out in a healthy way, and repressing emotion is not a healthy way to manage stress. Some people see social workers to help with the crisis. Some people see clergy. Some people laugh. I would say there's a point for all of those at certain times in our lives, but certainly laughter is free therapy. It's easy to find. It's easy to do, and we ought to take better advantage of it. Laughter is also a socially acceptable way to express emotion. For those of us who have a hard time getting angry or don't like to let on if we're depressed, laughing is really okay. People's moods usually improve with laughter, if you think about it. We'll go into that a little bit later. Any of you who are from the Seattle area know Dr. Dale Turner, who's a minister at, the Congregational Church in the U District. From one of his columns once, I took this quotation. Imagination was given to humans to compensate for what we are not, and a sense of humor was provided to console us for what we are. That was pretty astute on his part. So how about some definitions first of humor and laughter? What are we talking about? Give me some ideas. How would you define humor? I have some ideas, but I'll get yours first. Keep them simple, not 2-3 sentences. Humor.
The incongruous.
The incongruous. That's a great word. How's my spelling going to the college? Okay. What other words come to mind? Something that's funny. How about something that's amusing?
Absurd.
That's a good one. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. How's that? Interesting, as we see words like unexpected and overwhelming, they sort of came in when we were talking about crisis, too.
Clowns.
I hate to say this because my husband always says this is my form of humor, and it's earthy.
Earthy. I like that. Do you want to give us an example? Is your husband here? Would he give us an example?
No, he's not.
You don't have to. No pressure here at all. What else?
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Ridiculous we have. A welcome relief. How's that? From the obligations to be logical and serious. Mm-hmm. Nice to have some welcome relief. Aha! From an academician, it's a kind of critical thinking. The ability to see the amusing or funny side of life.
Because if you don't have any distance, something isn't
funny. Indeed, some objectivity helps us to look at something as funnier. And we're taught to critically think seriously. But I don't know that we're taught very well to critically think humorously. Probably takes some work. Okay, how about laughter? How do we define laughter?
Emotional release.
Emotional release. Yeah.
Physical response.
There's a physical response. Yeah, the dictionary definition, let me see if I can read it here. These are good. Making the sounds and movement of the body and face that show amusement, mirth, humor, etc. I kind of like Norman Cousins. He calls laughter internal jogging. So those of us who live in Minnesota all winter can laugh. Yeah.
A sense of connectedness and well-being.
Uh-huh. Connectedness in the human condition, that we all experience some of the same kinds of crises and traumas and all maybe laugh about it.
Spontaneous and involuntary.
Spontaneous. Yeah, it's kind of hard to plan to laugh. It's true.
Yeah, and sometimes it's a choice. When you get a circumstance, you can either cry or laugh.
And they're pretty close together, aren't they, on the circle of emotions, crying and laughter?
Contradictory.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to...
have something like the Ed Thomas song every morning.
That'll go on. What can we do to put laughter into our lives? We're getting to that. So hang on to that one, Doris. That's good. I've also heard laughter described as an instant vacation. Isn't that kind of nice? It's free, too. Cheap. It's not like coming to Holden Village. It doesn't take any time. No, no stress.
Fun.
Pardon me?
Fun.
Fun.
Release.
Release. Bob Hope called laughter the greatest wonder drug of all. A tranquilizer with no side effects. I like that. Other people I've seen it written a couple places that laughter is the shortest distance between two people. Or between two hearts. I've seen it written that way too.
Except that it's also, you know, we're talking here about the good kind of laughter.
Sure. We're gonna get to some other forms of
distance.
Yes. Yeah, right. People often use laughter to cover up what's really going on. And because they don't want to really deal with an emotion or a disagreement or something. Yeah, you're right. Some other words for laughter are chuckle, chortle, I always like that word, giggle, guffaw, and titter. You ever think of all those words for laughter? Those are good ones. Some other forms of humor in our society I'd like to just briefly go over. And last week we had somebody here who teaches, actually it was Jan Bowman, teaches satire at California Lutheran. It might have been nice to have her do a session on the use of satire. Satire is defined as the use of sarcasm or irony to attack or ridicule a habit or idea or custom or somehow, usually in a positive way. Satire is usually done positively. It's a fine line, though. Wit is the power to perceive quickly and express cleverly ideas that are unusual or striking or amusing. A lot of us know very witty people who can come up very quickly with a fun response or a different way of seeing things. Comedy is another form of humor that really shows the comic element of life, usually around an amusing incident or funny happening. Some of the negative humor we've talked about is often called black humor, which I don't like. I think it's not a helpful concept, but generally, negative humor is making sport of unfortunate people in life. And it usually has a racist, a sexist, an ageist tone to it. I think many of us can recognize it when we hear it. I think most of us don't stop it when we hear it. Probably one thing we can do for ourselves and each other is to try to stop the use of negative kinds of humor. When we were talking about last week about some of the things we can do to help people with AIDS, one of the things we can do is not tell AIDS jokes and to try to not appreciate jokes about AIDS when other people tell them. Something pretty small, but pretty significant. A very difficult one for us to get out of the habit of doing is ageist jokes. A lot of cards talk about how you're 30 now, and we've been teasing Steve all week about turning 40. And it's subtle. It's very subtle. But it does say something about what we believe about aging in our society. And I think we need to be as careful with our jokes as we are with our words and our language and what we say in everyday life. Can people think of examples of negative humor that somebody else said, of course, that you didn't...
Sarcasm.
Sarcasm can often be very negative. Yes, you're right.
Put down.
Put downs. I agree. And I, like I said, I don't tell ethnic jokes except on Norwegians, occasionally Swedes. Because that's my ethnicity. And I learned that from my father pretty young. Yeah, he didn't ever tell Polish jokes. He grew up in North Minneapolis when it was Polish, Jewish. And he didn't. Lots of Jewish jokes. Lots of jokes on people who are different than us. Why do you think we do that? We touched on it here. Part of it is covering up something we don't want to deal with, or
making yourself feel better by putting somebody else down.
Exactly. It attempts to elevate ourselves, and it often is a result of our own poor self-esteem. Yeah?
I think people with hearing problems will appreciate this. You have to have a sense of humor if you have a hearing problem.
Very good example. Very good example. And people with all sorts of disabilities. And that's part of what we're talking about today, that I made lots of jokes. The first 3 days I was here, I showed up. I'm going to talk for 2 weeks on healing, and I have a big bandage around my knee, and I'm hobbling. I can hardly get to Chalet 1. You know, and I have Gertrude's living up in 7, and people are zipping up and down the hill, and I made lots of jokes on myself about, sure, I hope the 2 weeks of healing here will do it for my knee. Well, it did. And again, a good way to objectify our own situation and get a little bit distant and be able to laugh at ourselves. Yeah, that's right. Well, let's list some of the benefits of laughter. We've talked about some of them. I love these. Let's just put them up on the board so we've seen them and they'll stick with us in our heads. Or if somebody wants to give me an example of when humor has benefited them. Let me tell you one about my mother. Some of you know that there are 3 children in our family getting married within 6 months this year. I had a sister get married in May and a brother in June, and I'm getting married in October. And we have a running joke now, because as each of the 3 kids told our mother with Alzheimer's that we were getting married, we got a funny response. Karen, my sister, got the best response. And we think that might be because she's known Bruce for 5 or 6 years, dated him for a long time, and Mom knew Bruce before she was diagnosed. So when Karen said, "Mom, Bruce and I are getting married, what do you think?" She said, "Oh, that's good." Then when Rolf told her that he and Amy were getting married, he was sitting with her and Amy out in the day room of the nursing home. And Rolf said, "Mom, Amy and I are getting married. What do you think about that?" And she looked around the room. She said, "Well, I suppose anybody here would do." Poor Amy. Amy felt terrible. No, Amy also knew my mom fairly well. Well, then I got the worst. I told her I was getting married to Peter, who I've known for 15 years, and she knew way back, before Dad died, before anything happened in our family. But she didn't really know him as somebody connected to me other than a friend. So when I said, "Mom, Peter Dahlin and I are getting married, what do you think about that?" She said, "Well, you can have him." You know, those comments had nothing to do with what I asked her, really. But we have to laugh. We have to laugh. In Alzheimer's, we laugh frequently with my mother about what's going on. And she laughs. My mother was a very stoic, reserved, quiet, calm, gracious woman. Rarely laughed, rarely cried. My father cried much more often than my mother growing up. Now that she has her Alzheimer's, she laughs a lot. And she cries a lot. She cries a lot more. She has much less repression of her emotions because of this illness. And in some ways, that's a good thing, because she really laughs till she cries frequently with us, which is a lot of fun for us to do. So anyway, other examples of when humor has helped you deal with a difficult situation? Yeah.
Somebody told me once that it's impossible to get ulcers when you're laughing. I don't know if that's true or not, but I like to think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're going to talk about some of the physiological benefits. There, that'd be neat research. Maybe I'll get my PhD in laughter therapy. There are people who are very seriously studying that. That there is a significant relaxation of muscles when you laugh. How many of you laugh till you're so weak you can hardly sit up, you can hardly do anything? You can't be stressed, and that's where the ulcers would come in, that you can't be walking around tight like this laughing. It just doesn't work. Yeah.
I think it releases tension, if not in myself, but perhaps a group. If it's if you're presenting, for example, humor breaks the ice, creates a bond, perhaps.
Indeed. Sometimes even in heavy-duty, high-stress work meetings, somebody will know just when to say something to break the whole room's tension. Tension that you can almost see, which is something that's hard to really fathom, but you know that it's different. People relax and then communication's better. Oh, I got to write these down. So what do we say? Decrease tension. Yes. Both in a room and internally. Right? So we can say external and internal. How's that? What else?
Creates a bond between you and the person you're laughing
at. It's a shared experience. Maybe 1 minute experience, but it is a shared one.
It changes perspective. Sometimes there's a difficulty an individual or group is experiencing, you can laugh at the situation for a moment. Oftentimes there's more choices.
And there's a lot of research on tears and the chemical makeup of tears. And is that a chemical, the chemical in tears, is that a chemical that builds up in our bodies and causes physiological problems like ulcers and other things? They're looking at that stuff. And laughter and tears, I mean, you can laugh so hard you cry. And that can be a wonderful catharsis. And sometimes we're not sure if we're laughing or crying, and maybe the situation calls for both or neither, and we just respond as we respond. Yeah.
Sometimes, especially in families where you have family jokes, there is a kind of shortening so that you can say, oh, yes, I know you're mad at me right now, but remember that funny time that you did such and such, or you have certain little phrases, that it creates bond. It does a lot of those things at once and communicates something very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Reiterates intimacy also. That you really are close to this person because you've shared that other humorous incident.
My father has a particular brand of humor that's kind of corny and known in our family. And my kids had the same when someone told a joke that my father would appreciate or tell. Grandpa joke alert.
Grandpa joke alert. That's great. That's a good example. And they'll remember that all through their lives.
It could be a form of teaching.
Teaching. Yes. An excellent way to teach.
I think in a lecture or even a sermon, it starts with a joke, gets your attention.
Attention grabber, yeah, that's a good one.
It's also a way to deal with physical pain. Having broken my back twice, I get stuck in a cycle of pain that almost gets to me, but if I can laugh at something, if I can just break loose,
Mm-hmm. There's also some research, and maybe some medical people here know exactly what is happening with it, but I've understood research about laughter releasing the natural endorphins in our brains that are natural painkillers. Which would be...
Norman Cousins wrote a long time ago, his own illness.
Right. Yeah, I mentioned his... Yep, his initial book was on that, and that's really, and he teaches now at medical school in California,
right.
New York, no, California. Yeah, and his degree is in self-healing and laughter, basically. Other examples of what laughter can do. For people who are moderately depressed, and I say moderately because severely depressed people aren't usually helped by laughter. Very much. I mean, they really need to be low to not be helped. But severely depressed people can have, increased depression. That's good. Their depression decreased by laughter. How many of you have been in the middle of an intense argument with a spouse or a child or a friend, and one of you cracks a joke, and the other one says, "I wish you wouldn't do that," but starts laughing in spite of himself or herself, and pretty soon you forget exactly what you were so intensely arguing about, and you can kind of start from a new point in the argument.
I like to do that in
church meetings. Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. Somebody has talked also about laughter being a socially contagious disease. I probably should have talked about that last week. AIDS is not socially contagious, but it's very difficult to not laugh when people around you are. Have you ever found that? Kids laugh and laugh and laugh, and it's hard not to start laughing right along with them. So it's a good disease to be spreading. Definitely given. Can be also used to distract attention, I think, from... that can be positive and negative, as was mentioned. Anything else? Something that's important to note, especially for worriers like I am, is that the most commonly bought drug in this country is aspirin. The most commonly prescribed drug in this country is tranquilizers. And maybe the hope is someday if you call a physician up for a problem, the physician will just say, "Prescription is watch Lily Tomlin, go to bed and call me in the morning." It'd be nice if we could be that healthy in our society. It'd be great. Laughter can also decrease anger. It can increase joy in our everyday life. People who read the comics, for instance, every day, instead of only the front page and the editorial page, which is what I always do. I read the A section and the editorial page, and about once a month look at the Sunday comics, just because that was a habit from childhood. And every time I read them, I say, I really need to do this more frequently. I mean, even Charlie Brown is right there with me saying, I've learned now that I can only dread one day at a time instead of all of life, as a worrier tends to do. And that's very helpful. In the book, The Laughter Prescription, Lawrence Peters describes a delicious cycle. He says, the more well-adjusted we are and the more satisfying our lives, the more readily we can respond to humor in jokes and in cartoons and life situations. Therefore, the more satisfied we are with life and the more well-adjusted we are, he says, it's a wonderfully delicious cycle. I thought that was a marvelous way to put it. So how about how we get more humor out of life? I have to say, have any of you from Minneapolis area? Any of you heard Marilyn Belgum? Oh, my God. This woman... She's 65 years old. She's been a social worker for 41 years. She said, after being a social worker for 41 years and raising 6 children, I started to get funny. Anybody would, she said. Anybody would get funny. So it isn't that unlikely a switch. She is now a stand-up comedian, and she's getting famous, not only locally, but she's been on a couple of national radio shows. And she talks about the not-so-subtle difference between doing social work or any helping profession where we really see people at their most vulnerable, their most real, their most courageous at times, and humor, when we can talk about the value of humor in trying to cope with life situations, illness, crisis, whatever it might be. She is absolutely hysterical, if you ever get the chance. I have a little article about her here. I also have some other jokes up here.
What is her name?
Marilyn Belgum, B-E-L-G-U-M. You know, this is kind of a fun one to do after all my heavy sessions through the last 2 weeks. So how can we get more humor in life? We mentioned a few things. What were they?
Really?
Lily Tomlin.
But you know, actually going to the, going and renting a VCR and you go to the comedy section, it's really hard to find.
Good stuff. Yeah, you're right. You have to find a good video store.
Most of it's either dirty humor or it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people think violent humor is funny. I mean, I certainly don't. It is hard to find. You have to look up the old stuff. The old candid cameras. Yeah, yeah. That's. Pardon me?
Red Skelton.
Red Skelton. Oh, and the Honeymooners. Remember them? Red's.
Funny book to give to somebody who's ill is hard to find.
Yes, it is. It is. Does anyone have a suggestion of a funny book?
Yeah, everything I wanted to learn, everything I need to know, I learned in kindergarten. That's great. I was in the hospital. I was reading everybody that hurt like heck to laugh, and nurses would come and say, "How can you laugh?"
That's so great.
We were just.
Do you know who that's?
Rolling in laughter. The one about the raccoons mating under his. Under his house.
Dr. Seuss has an adult book out too.
That's very good. About getting older? Is it about getting older?
Yeah.
Someone gave that to my mother. It is hysterical. Yeah.
And it doesn't always have to be the real hysterical. Sometimes just seeing the twist in things.
Some of Garrison Keillor's poking fun at Norwegians in Minnesota. Yeah. Is any of you who are Lutherans can laugh at those
That's
of us
like
who are.
I say another one. If you're Lutheran and Norwegian, Ludafisk Ghetto.
Ludafisk Ghetto. I've not heard of that one. Do we have it up here?
No, it's for people who were romancing in the 1940s and after World War II. It is. Pass it out among your
friends. Ludafisk Ghetto, yes.
It's
Minnesota,
but it is just
ridiculous.
No.
Anybody else have suggestions?
Never Cry Wolf.
Uh-huh.
But Veterinary Stories.
Veterinary Stories by James Herriot.
Yeah.
Irma Bombeck.
Life is a bowl of cherries. I got that in the hospital, and it was
a good one.
The nurses all came in to get the next episode.
You know, a couple of you have mentioned about. Well, let's. Yeah, go ahead.
Patrick McManus.
Series of books by him. What are they? What are some titles? Oh, yeah, right.
Never look a gift fish in the mouth.
You can often tell by titles. They're good ones. People have mentioned being in the hospital, and one thing that I neglected to mention when we were talking about how humor helps us cope, those of us who are in the helping professions, well, and many of us, we need to draw the distinction between laughing at and laughing with people in crisis. And I've lived in households of all medical people where we'll come home and one of us will tell a story about a patient, you wouldn't have believed this, and we laugh and laugh and laugh. And I think that it's a fine distinction, but a lot of people in high-pressure, people-related jobs frequently have to let off steam about those jobs, and that often involves laughing at the situation. But again, how we phrase that and what we do with that so that we're not laughing at the people is pretty important to do. But it is a critical piece of it, and you can witness even in the AIDS cartoon. The doctor says, what do I do with it at the end of the day? Oh, I'll go out and rob a bank, hold up something. You know, little things like that.
Does your mom ever think you're laughing at her when she says something funny?
She has a couple of times, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because my mom has said, you're laughing
yes,
at me.
Yes, my
she
mom,
real
yeah.
Serious.
I agree. It was especially difficult in about the year period of time where she knew something was pretty wrong. And she was particularly frustrated about it and kept saying, I am so stupid.
No.
I feel so stupid. I know this stuff. And now she's farther along, so that whenever we laugh, whatever we're laughing at, she laughs right with us. We do have a little joke in the family that started pretty early on of keeping track by points of who could figure out where Mom's head was. She would sit there and all of a sudden come out with a half a phrase or a half a sentence. And when I moved back from Seattle, I had not been around my mother hardly at all for the first couple years of her diagnosis. My younger sisters, who had been there all the time, always knew what she was talking about. It was always related to something a day ago or a week ago, or it almost always made sense to them because they'd been around her so much. So I always lost. But we'd always sort of behind her back say, 10 points for you, kind of thing. But that was one way we coped with it.
You know, I think of how much actually abuse was done in the name of humor, teasing your family.
Oh.
And say, can't you take a joke?
Yeah.
Don't you? And that's just, I just said it as a jest, or something, but it's really a put down.
Yeah, that's very dangerous, and we need to kind of call each other on that, particularly when we're the object and we feel hurt. You know, don't just take the hurt and walk away with it. Talk about why that was hurtful. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that happens with children a lot. They can be very amusing to us as adults, and sometimes they say and do, and we feel inclined to laugh.
Can I hear you, Margaret?
Yeah. She said with children, it's very frequent because they do amusing things and we're inclined to laugh at them. It's important that we communicate that that isn't a laughing at them. It's a laughing with them and enjoying their childhood or whatever, however we're going to put it.
To go back to humor, does this, I think often we use humor to test the waters.
Uh-huh.
And I talked about this with you. So I tell a joke and if you laugh, then I say, oh, okay, well, we have kind of the same idea about it, so now I can talk to you about it. So that we use it as kind of a trail.
Testing the waters. Very, very common in healthcare with patients. You know, does this person have a sense of humor? I don't know. Never seen her before. So I'll try out something that I think is pretty obviously funny, and if she doesn't pick up on it, then she doesn't have an obvious sense of humor like mine, and might be a little more subtle. But that's important to do that carefully, and that's true. We need to. It's a way to establish some trust, too, and a line of connection.
Back to the laughing at people or with people, it's important to be able to laugh at ourselves because that's what most of our humor consists of, is our laughing at our human frailties. But it's important if you're going to tease someone about a certain thing that they initiate, that they're able to laugh at themselves, and they're the ones that initiate it, I think. If they initiate it, and you can tease about it, that's one thing. But if you initiate it, you might be touching on something that really is a touchy subject for them.
A little bit of dangerous ground, yeah.
So you have to watch what people laugh at in themselves first before you start to tease.
And the lesson in that for us is that we can initiate some of that about ourselves.
Oh, yeah, it's very important to be able to laugh at yourself. Uh-huh. It's healthy. But there's certain things you just don't want to bring up.
That's right. You know, as I was starting, when I was younger and Dad had just died, and I started talking about Oli and Lena and Sven and all of those folks, I really read some Norwegian joke books. And then I worked at the Norse Home in Seattle, which was a retirement home built by the Norwegian community for Scandinavian immigrants. They did let Swedes and Danes in. Special application, of course, but they didn't take jokes very well because almost all these folks were immigrants. They came over around 1910, 1920, and most of them were 80 or 90 years old, and they were the butt of a lot of jokes, a lot of stupid Norwegian jokes. People who didn't learn English quickly enough got ridiculed in many of their communities, and you know how Scandinavians... Many of the men are so big and bulky and sort of hulking, big hands, farmers or fishermen, and they were the butt of a lot of jokes. So that made me think a little bit about how I would have felt. I'm fourth generation, and I'm perfectly accustomed to living in this country. I'm not sure I would have laughed real well at myself back then. We might have been more healthier over time if we had, but they were really the butt of a lot of jokes. I'm sure some of you could relate to that from parents or grandparents even, maybe still not laughing. So I thought maybe I'd learn a lot of new Ole and Lena jokes at the Norse home, and I didn't. I think that's a second and third gen, fourth generation kind of a deal. We finally learn how to laugh at ourselves. Yeah?
I come from a family who have elevated storytelling, usually starting to tell a story about their own experience, and tell it with a great deal of humor. And that's really a good place to begin to see humor in very ordinary situations that you get told.
Yeah, and it's something we do much more easily with children, mm-hmm. and we sort of let it go when our kids get older. And what a value, you know, how many had some older relative who was a good storyteller? It's a wonderful gift, and something probably more of us could develop if we took the time to do it. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Practical jokes that are in good taste.
Mm-hmm. Again, a fine line, but they can be so wonderful.
The candid camera is a...
Yep. I heard... Go ahead.
My daughter brought a friend up here with her, and she was telling us how when she was 16, on April Fool's Day, she and her boyfriend, in the middle of the night, switched places. And so her mother came in the next morning to wake her up and found her boyfriend in her bed.
Oh, my gosh!
It was really funny.
That is funny. That is funny. How many think that's funny? How many adolescents are in this room? You guys heard it now. Oh, boy, oh, boy. I learned that at Holden Village. I can see it now.
I think, too, you cultivate relationships, friendships with positive people. It helps with people who do see the humor.
Yep. Seek them out. Cultivate friendships with funny people. I think that's great.
Flashbacks, you know, you have an experience with somebody and it can be 2 or 3 years old, but you're walking down the street or doing something together and all of a sudden you see something that reminds both of you of something that happened and all of a sudden you burst out laughing. Nobody around you understands, but you know, families in particular, I think, can share that.
And don't let those opportunities go by. I think we often do, especially a flashback would go right through your mind, but learn to recognize it and grab it. I have to tell one funny thing. Several years ago, do you know Elmer Witt, who was the director here? Bald. I'm going to go see him next week. He's bald. And he'd been out for, I don't know, a week or 2 weeks. And three of the long-term winter community members shaved their heads and had Elmer Witt look-alike day when he came back. And they all had beards and mustaches. Perfectly harmless. Elmer jokes about his baldness all the time. So he, I don't know if you were here, Gertrude, but people... all greeted him at the pole with these bald heads and beards. Oh, I think that's good. Somebody had a hand up. Yeah.
I was just reminded of a book I read that there was a twist on the saying about it'll be funny in the future, you know.
Someday you'll laugh at this.
Yeah, someday you'll laugh at it. It said, if it's going to be funny someday, it's funny now.
Yeah, because how many of us say that? There will be a time we think this is funny. When I was up on Mount Furno, I said to David, we'll laugh when we're on the flat ground. This will be funny, yeah. And so then do we laugh then? I'm not sure. Is David in the room? Yeah, back.
I took cartoons from the New Yorker magazine. I got a box of them, and then I photocopied them and make my cartoon volume.
That is a marvelous idea, because some of us don't know what to say when somebody's ill or sick or been hit by a crisis. Sometimes if we send a joke, we don't have to sit and struggle over words and what's going to be right. And if you've collected them over time, particularly related to certain subjects, inevitably in your network of friends or family, you're going to find somebody who will benefit by that joke. And the New Yorker is a great one. Or New York Times.
I love to just, when I read the comics, I'm always thinking of people that, you know, and I'm clipping them and giving them the cartoon that relates.
Yeah, clipping and sending.
I think one of the funniest people that comes here Mahone Village is a musician who works with Garrison Keillor, Phil Brunel.
Phil. Get to know Phil Brunel. Where are we here? Cultivate friendships with funny people. He is funny.
Phil Brunel put together, did a whole tape for our 50th wedding anniversary. And we write to each other all the time, and I start laughing as I open his envelope.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, he wrote a lot of the Beanie Sing words to a lot of the songs,
well,
if you notice.
We worked together on that. That's where I learned to know his
It's great.
Sense of humor.
That's how Doris got funny.
I wanted to mention something about when you brought up Thelma Whip. When Jenny, his wife, had cancer, found out about it, she, of course, had chemotherapy and lost all her hair. And she said, so she looked like Thelma with her bald hair. We're going to send out a Christmas letter this year with our bald heads. And they did.
They did. They took a picture with both of them bald. And then they took one with both of them in wigs.
And they both had wigs on.
It was so funny. And they got mileage out of that for themselves and a lot of the grieving people around them. Yeah, it was a very good example.
Something else I think that our children enjoy sharing, and we do too, are part of our funny history together, home movies, you know, people have video cameras and that sort of thing. Our funny stories about what they did when they were
Yeah.
Kind of intergenerational history.
Yep. Yep. When Dad was dying, we wrote down some of the funny things he said or wrote while he was on the respirator. And at one point, it was really close to the time of his death, and his siblings were all around, and his kids and Mom, we were all there. And we were all in the room together, and he was lying in the bed, and we're all around his bed. You've been in this situation. You all look at this poor person in the bed. And my father was a minister, so he laid there in his bed, looked up at us, and said, I suppose you wonder why I've called you all together. We're all sobbing and laughing at the same time, and he sort of winked like he always did, so we wrote that down. And we all sang the doxology together in his room with him. And after that, he said, you may be dismissed, just like just like a minister would, and laughed at that, too. Yeah, just you have to have it. Yeah.
I think just learning to be more observant of people all around you. That's one thing. I kind of sat back and watched Walt Wanderer as he's sitting in the center area and stuff. And if you watched him, he's just watching people all the time. And maybe he needs to learn to do that too. Mm-hmm. Bringing giggles.
Absolutely.
Or even just overhearing conversations sometimes, you can hear the funniest things.
Very funny things. Very funny things. How about just being with children more? I'm never with kids. Mm-hmm. I don't have them. My sibs are grown up. They don't have them. Hardly any of my friends have them. They're all having them now. But being with children and really not letting our own rigidity get in the way. You know, I couldn't be silly. I couldn't be down fighting with my child or on the floor, playing with my child. It's another socially acceptable way to be silly is to do it with kids. And so if that's the way we need to do it, let's take advantage of it.
One that can be overdone, but I think something I grew up watching was our Linkletter interviewing the kids, give them a question, and then let the kids answer the question.
Yeah.
And kids said that, and I just love doing that with kids, you know, in a kind of a fun educational setting. Ask them a tough question no one knows the answer to, and get a child's perspective on it. I just think it's
see what
so,
they
so
say.
Sometimes it's really wise, but oftentimes it's just delightful.
Yeah.
Kind of watch their minds work.
Get a kid's perspective.
Watching them interact with each other, sometimes if you stand back where they don't know you're there, you can watch them and listen to how they interact with each other. It's very, very funny.
Or if you've ever chauffeured a bunch of kids to a ball game or something and just listen to their conversation in the backseat.
Yeah, and get past the irritation of constant conversation and activity and listen to it. Pay attention to it. Yeah. There's lots of laughter on my mother's Alzheimer's unit. Lots of laughter. Because a lot of these folks know that they're saying stupid things sometimes, and they start laughing at themselves. They laugh at each other. And their conversations sometimes are perfectly in earnest, very serious, make absolutely no sense to me. And I can leave and laugh. I don't usually laugh while I'm there, but it's good humor sometimes.
I wonder if several teachers had the experience of, you know, during free play time with little children, standing back and watching them play teacher. It's really quite revealing.
Oh, that's a great example. Especially, yeah, and then when they make fun of us. Why don't we pass these around? I'm just passing out one of the laughter prescription lists that I did a long time ago. Put a few of these things together. The other is, I think, from this book, The Laughter Prescription. And I'm embarrassed to say I don't know, and so I didn't get permission to use it. So don't publish it, and don't copy it, and don't do something else with it. But some suggestions on how to continue to try to be humorous in our life. We also need to, I think, keep our egos, and that's what she was saying back here, keep our own egos in proper perspective when we're talking about humor. Because if we're too proud and our egos are too big, we can't laugh at ourselves. And when someone else starts poking fun, innocent fun, healthy fun at us, we don't deal with it very well. I appreciated particularly Ted Madison's matins last week on ego hiking. You know, that I have to be somebody who gets to the top. And, you know, someone like Gertrude would appreciate if I pay attention on the way. And if I don't get to the top, no big deal. I've looked at the plants and the trees and the flowers. But if somebody starts teasing me about not getting to the top, and it was a big deal for me if I didn't get to the top, I don't do very well with that. So it's an important thing to keep in mind also. One last little comment. This is also from the Laughter Prescription book. He said, one way we can keep humor in our life is to be like the physician, sorry for the doctors in the room, whose patients were slow in paying. So he sent out little notices with the bill that said, long time, no fee. I bet he got paid pretty quickly, at least. Chunks of his bills were paid pretty quickly.
She was showing it to me, and she said to the doctor, when she went to him, she said, I think one of the screws is loose, and he said, only one.
I was in the room with a person with AIDS, who'd been losing lots of weight, and we just had this real serious discussion with the doctor, and what tests were we going to do to figure out why all the weight loss, and then it got into real heavy discussion about how much he wanted done in life and whether he wanted a respirator if he ever got sick and all of that thing. And as the doctor was leaving the room, he said, I'll leave you with Mary now and you can go over a few other things. And he said, what we need to do is find out why it is you're losing weight. And the guy looked at him and said, Doctor, maybe it's because I have AIDS. And we all three just howled because, you know, we had 20 minutes of really serious, and we just laughed. He was able to laugh at himself. Anybody want to share one last humorous incident? We're ending a little early for my last session, I realize. Yeah. Honeymoon Heights, that's good. I hope that came out on the tape. That's excellent. Well, thank you for your serious and your laughing attention all week, and I wish you all the best. Thank you.
You know, we should have applauded before she started. You ever hear the definition of applause?
No.
Before your presentation, it's applause of anticipation. During the presentation, it's appreciation, and at the end, it's relief. Yeah. We missed it.
Try it next week.
Yeah.
I don't know who's coming next week, but that'll be good.
At the end, it's relief.